Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Yeah. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning, one and all. Good morning, Mark Riley. How are you?
I'm doing great, man.
Nice to see you. Good morning, Tim, the librarian on the board. Kalo out, but not out of the country. Kalo is out. I asked him, where are you going on vacation? He's like, nowhere.
Under the air conditioner.
He's going to Costco for his vacation. I bet you he calls in at some point. Do you bet? Maybe not. Maybe he'll never call us.
No, he might call.
I told him to feel free to call if he was up, but why the hell would you get up? Hey, so look, man, I got a little bit of a cold, but I'm going to plow through it. You know what I mean? I'm not going to acknowledge it because I'm going to learn from you, Riley.
What?
You only die once.
That's,
right.
You know.
But you get a cold, you don't even tell anybody about it. You just have it and you suffer quietly and you don't even mention it. And I get a cold. I'm like, I'm yelling at my wife. I call her up. I'm yelling at my wife because I'm sick and I'm lonely and there's no one to take care of me. And she's in Los Angeles living the life and having big meetings. But I don't care. Like, I'm a completely selfish bastard.
Well, you know what? When I get sick, my wife just laughs. You know, they're taken care of.
Yeah.
Here, have some tea, have a good life.
Well, yeah, but that's about all I'm asking for. But it's nice, even for the gesture, just to, you know, like, come on, just give me one little thing, you know. But I'm taking care of myself. Look at, I got the nose drops, I got the zinc. And Pashman, I'm tired of this crap. You can't stop a cold. Once it starts, you can't stop it. I'm tired of believing in the dream. You know what I mean? I must have, I swear.
You can sweat it out, though.
No, I know, but I think right now half of my blood is zinc. All right, I ate so much zinc yesterday that I thought that it would do it, and I don't think it did it.
You get any ginger?
Dude, I've done that. You know, it's all comforting. It's all it's an idea.
Oh no, not ginger. You juice down some ginger, if you take the ginger root and run it through one of those juicers, so you only get a little bit of that really green looking juice.
I tried it.
And you put that in some hot water with some lemon and some honey, and then you go on the roof of your building when it's 95 degrees out. You won't have that cold the next day.
You'll
feel like crap for about 10 hours, but you'll feel fine the next day.
I don't know, man. I tried the ginger thing once before. All right, well, look, on this day in 1977, Elvis left his life on the toilet in Memphis, folks. In 1948, Babe Ruth struck out in the big game.
Oh, that's cool.
In 1956, Bela Lugosi really went to sleep in a coffin. Those are the big news. Elvis Presley. We did. This is 77. So what does that make it? Almost 30 years.
It'll make 28
years. Wow. 1948. Babe Ruth died of throat cancer. 56. Bela Lugosi, a broken man by the time he died. Certainly.
He's the most fascinating of the three of them, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, what a trip that dude was, man. Martin Landau in that Ed Wood movie was genius in playing Bela Lugosi.
He was married like four times. He always thought his wives were cheating on him for some reason. Mm. He had this morphine addiction apparently for a period. He also was a union organizer. That's why they ran him out of Europe, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
That was early on before he became broken and addicted to morphine.
He didn't get the morphine thing till the 40s.
Weird when you're addicted to morphine and spending a lot of time checked out how you might think your wife is doing other things since you're, you know, half awake most of the time. So look at this. The Washington Post pulls support from the Pentagon-sponsored celebration of the 9/11 massacres and their attempts to relink Iraq and 9/11. This is important stuff. The Washington Post announced yesterday that it will back out of a co-sponsorship role in this event. The march. What did they call it? The America Supports Your Freedom Walk, sponsored by the Pentagon. Now, Riley and I talked about this last week, about how heinous it is that they would hijack a completely liberal frame of the March on Washington, the fight for rights, the dissent and movement of people towards justice, democratic action. And then you get the Pentagon who says, well, we're going to have our own march. And what's really heinous about this to me, Riley, is that the paper, the Washington Post, says they stated a fear of the event becoming politicized. Really? The Pentagon's sponsoring the event, but you think it might be political? What kind of asinine thing? What were they getting into here? They got busted. People criticized them. People said, you can't do this. You're a paper that said there was no link between Iraq and 9/11. Here's an event that is trying to relink Iraq and 9/11 and exploit the deaths of thousands of people who were killed in this country, and you see you're being hypocritical. They got busted by dissent. It's a beautiful thing.
You know, it's interesting you talk about the civil rights frame, because later this morning, we're going to be talking to filmmaker Keith Beauchamp, who did a film about Emmett Till, who was a 14-year-old black kid who was killed in Mississippi back in 1954. And that really was a catalyst for the civil rights movement. The fact that his mother had guts enough to say, we're going to have his funeral with an open coffin. We'll get into that later, but that you know, if you try and put that against what this administration has done in Iraq, there's absolutely no comparison. Absolutely none.
Well, that's
whatsoever.
It. Yeah, the March on Washington, the idea of the March on Washington for the Pentagon to try and co-opt that for their own publicity means is just heinous and just another example of how Rumsfeld is completely ineffectual and completely evil in the sense that, like, how could he not think that this wouldn't get some resistance? You know what I mean? It's just horrendous. And we were going to close it with this a big sort of borderline celebration of 9/11, and the idea was that Rumsfeld said the walk would remind people the sacrifices of this generation of each previous generation. See the clever linkage there? Mm-hmm. He's using 9/11 to say that, you know, we have to support our troops, and it's got nothing to do with either. And obviously the families of the people in 9/11 were upset about this, and obviously there was enough dissent against the Washington Post for them to pull their free advertising support of this event. This is a good thing. This should be considered a small victory on behalf of those who fought this thing.
Oh, yeah, and there were several people who did, including journalists in the Post's own newsroom. The Newspaper Guild, the Post, you know, the Washington, Baltimore Newspaper Guild was extremely critical. So there were folks that came together, and anti-war groups as well.
And this,
this is ridiculous.
And this was all moving towards a Clint Black performance. This is the guy that's saying Iraq and roll. I mean, there is no clearly, it couldn't be clearer that this was a politicized propaganda event on behalf of the war machine to hijack a civil rights frame to utilize as a publicity campaign for the benevolence of a completely corrupt administration.
Let's see what happens now, because there are other media sponsors, including one radio station and two television stations. Let's see if they step up to the plate and recognize the obvious as well and back out of their support of this march.
And there is going to be a real march on Washington on September 24th. We'll be giving you details to that. And, you know, this is one in earnest of people that are demanding justice, that are demanding civil rights, that are demanding action in relation to a war based on lies. There is obviously a protest going on down in Crawford, Cindy Sheehan, still down in Crawford, even though people across the way were shooting shotgun blasts up into the air and claiming they were just testing their gun. You know what that guy is? You know what the guy who shot the shotgun off across the street from the Sheehan protest from the Bush camp? You know what that guy is? That guy's an ass kisser. This is what these people are. These bikers that go down there, these guys that go down and do counter protests to Cindy Sheehan, a mother of a slain boy in Iraq, they are ass kissers. They are trying. He's shooting off his gun to show the president, who lives across the street from him, that he's got some nads, and he's got some chutzpah.
That's not all that's going on. Apparently, this is just in. A pickup truck tore through rows of white crosses last night near Bush's ranch in Crawford. Now, these crosses stretched along the road at Camp Casey. No one was hurt, but obviously the message was very clear. This pickup truck was trying to destroy. These crosses were put up, obviously, by supporters of Cindy Sheehan.
It's a great metaphor. It's a great metaphor for a guy that doesn't care about the troops.
Yeah.
Great metaphor. Those crosses represent war dead. So this guy in his pickup decides he's going to plow through a symbol of war dead that shows, great, it's a pickup, it's in Texas, it's a counter-protester. He rides over the crosses representing the war dead of Iraq, and that's how he's going to disrupt the peace down there. That's how he's going to make his statement. Well, he's doing exactly what this administration does, steamrolling the idea that actual human beings die, trying to put that underneath the truck, so to speak. Metaphors in action. We'll talk to Cindy Sheehan about that. We're going to get her on the phone in the third hour, hopefully. We had a little trouble yesterday, but I think we'll be able to talk to her about
this
a little later. In just a second, the Iraqi Constitution, which did not meet its deadline yesterday, they were going to take a week extension, and there's a lot of issues still at hand, like all of them. We'll get into that in a second. 15 past the hour. Good morning. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
19 past the hour. Good morning. It's Tuesday. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I don't know if I can let this thing go just yet, Riley. We're going to do the iNews in a few minutes here, but a pickup truck tore through rows of white crosses last night near President Bush's ranch where Cindy Crawford has been protesting the Iraq war.
Cindy Sheehan.
Yeah, sorry, man. I got a cold in my head. Cindy Sheehan out there on the road. They put these white crosses up to symbolize Iraqi war dead and some idiot in a pickup truck. That's his big counter protest, is to run over the symbols of our war dead, which is, you know, completely characterizes beautifully, you know, what this president represents, a president who was unable to go to a funeral for a veteran, for someone who was lost in the war, because it would taint his image. And here you got somebody who obviously supports the president running over the very symbol of those dead, and it was put there for that reason. And I think that his action, his counter-terrorist, his counter-protest action, that's a bad slip, his counter-protest action is very revealing in terms of the sentiment of the people that are against Cindy Sheehan in her protest. I mean, you got people like O'Reilly. Look, in my eyes, the only way to honestly support the troops is to bring them home. It has been made clear to all of us that this war was based on a series of lies. It has been made clear to all of us that we are doing nothing more than training new waves of terrorists. It has been made clear to all of us by military officials and people on the ground that this war is unwinnable in the way they are doing it. And now, the Iraqi Constitution, the thing that the Americans have bullied the Iraqis into doing by yesterday, has been put off for another week because they can't pull it together.
Of course they can't pull it together. There are many, many very contentious issues. And by the way, anyone who knows anything about American history will tell you that there were a lot of contentious issues in the framing of the U.S. Constitution. The Americans didn't just come together and say, oh, okay, we got, you know, Ben Franklin and Jefferson and all these people. They didn't just all come together in a room and say, okay, we have a Constitution. The fact is, quite simply, that other than the fact that the time limit was in the interim Constitution, the idea of a deadline is an American idea. The Iraqis don't have to have a deadline to finish a constitution. That's not really the point. There is an American political imperative that makes the deadline a real thing for the Americans. Now, it's true that in this instance, if they don't reach a deadline by next month, if they don't reach a constitution by next Monday, since they extended it for a week, then there will be a constitutional problem, because the interim constitution calls for the dissolution of the National Assembly if that deadline isn't met.
So this is getting more and more compelling, exciting, and chaotic. Apparently, the reason why they could not agree on a constitution yesterday, obviously Sunni, Shia, and Kurdish leaders cannot make an agreement over autonomy, over who gets to be the ruling party. The Sunnis have their own issues in terms of feeling ostracized by the new Shiite power structure. And there was even talk that they would disenfranchise the Sunnis altogether.
Well, you know, the Sunnis are looking up and seeing a gigantic anvil lurking over their heads. The Sunnis ruled Iraq for a long time. And now they are looking to access political power, to the max in proportion to their numbers. They're only 20% of the population. And each one of these different groups, the Kurds, the Shia, and the Sunni, have their own issues that they're trying to write into the Constitution over the objections of the other groups. The Kurds want the right to secede.
And they're the only ones that are really set up to do that. And I think what we were talking about before the show, if you could tell our audience a little bit about that, you know, these guys are trained and they're ready to cut they can cut off now.
Well, yeah, you'll notice, folks, if you pay very close attention to what's going on in Iraq, that you very rarely, if ever, hear about an insurgent attack on Kurds. You might want to ask yourself, why is that, since they attack anybody else? They'll attack Americans, they'll attack Shia, they'll even attack Sunnis. But why don't they attack the Kurds? The reason is because the Kurds have the best organized militia in the country. Far better organized, far better armed, in fact, and far better trained than anything that the Iraqis are coming up with on their own in Baghdad.
Yeah, and it's very interesting that, you know, one of the other things you don't really hear is that they talk about a Sunni-led insurgency, and they rarely recently have really talked about just how many international jihadists are buttressing that insurgency and are also there, and how many disenfranchised regular Iraqis are there. They try to make it political right now because of what's going on. And you can understand the Sunni minority is very frightened that they will completely be cut off from all the benefits of what that country has to offer if and when it actually starts to offer that, if they can get this power structure under control.
Yeah, and you know what's scaring the bejesus out of the Sunnis is the Shiite demand that their cleric council, which is an organized group of their top religious people, be independent of the government. Oh. In other words, they would be a law unto themselves. That scares the Sunnis, because the Sunnis figure that's the first step down the road toward a theocratic Iraq, and that does not inure to their benefit.
Right, and there's no doubt that this is going to become an Islamic Republic. And, you know, the American officials involved in the government and in the military have surrendered that they're not going to have a model democracy, that they're not going to get people working, that they're not even going to, they haven't even provided an infrastructure there. And now there's not only is there not going to be a democracy, but there's probably going to be an Islamic Republic of some sort. And this is interesting, too. One of the other contentious issues in the Constitution, and I want to quote Howard Dean. This was Dean on Sunday on Meet the Press, I believe, quote, "It looks like today, and this could change, as of today, it looks like women will be worse off in Iraq than they were when Saddam Hussein was president of Iraq," end quote. Now, of course, the right-wing propaganda outlets took him to task, calling him un-American, calling him a Saddam sympathizer, whatever. But it turns out that one of the contentious issues in drafting this Constitution is that no women's rights were mentioned. And when you're dealing with the potential Islamic Republic and the laws of Sharia, you know, if you don't mention them in there on some level, that there's a real good chance that they're not going to be allowed to talk, they're not going to be allowed to work, they're not going to be able to show their faces, they're going to have to wear burqas, that, you know, that Dean was right.
And there are two very important and contentious economic issues at play here.
Uh-huh.
One is inheritance, because under Sharia law, women cannot inherit to the same extent that a male, that their brothers could inherit. And the other is that women under Sharia law would not be allowed to initiate divorce. So that means, of course, that it would be a male prerogative under this law. And that is a very, very contentious issue. And Iraqi female human rights groups, and there are some that exist inside the country, are raising pure D hell about this.
Well, yeah. I mean, the conflict, the inter between, you know, secular Sunnis and people who were living a relatively secular life under Hussein, though he was a tyrant and a murderer and a horrendous dictator, they were having some secular life, that they had a choice to not be an extremist.
Yeah.
You know, gas prices are crazy. We're going to get into that a little bit, and we're also going to talk a little bit about what George Bush is going to be doing while he's not talking to Cindy Sheehan, not Cindy Crawford, okay? It's 27 past the hour. I hope you're having an okay morning. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. A little bit of business here. Later in the show, we're going to make a Dave Chappelle fan very happy. His TV show may be dead, but Sony Entertainment is releasing Dave's uncensored Showtime special on DVD, and we're giving away 5 copies starting today. So stay tuned to win a copy of Dave Chappelle's For What It's Worth on DVD. I'm actually going to be on Opie and Anthony later in the afternoon for those of you
listening and dancing pleasure.
For those of you who want to see the rambling id of Mark Maron in the worst of ways. I can let out all that stuff that I can't do here. You know what I'm saying, baby? All right. So anyway, Mark Riley will be on New York One tonight doing some post debate analysis after the New York City Democratic mayoral candidates face off.
Yeah.
And also this Friday, well, we are going up to Amy Ruth's in Harlem. If you want to come down, 6 to 9, we'll be there with Mick Foley, professional wrestler, comedian Mike B, and best-selling author Bret Easton Ellis. Riley will be there. There's going to be free coffee. I'm sure there's going to be some good food up there.
I'm sorry. I'm taking the Harlem gig off.
Oh, are you? She's going to send me up there by myself.
Only kidding.
My white self up there hosting the Harlem show without Mark Riley. Okay.
No, it's not gonna... I will be there.
Oh, good. Thanks, man. I just I feel better if you were there. Is that all right?
White folks come to Harlem now. This is a new day.
That's what I hear. I hear that Harlem is not just a bunch of black people waiting to kill white people.
No, that's absolutely true. And there are white cabbies who will actually drive through Harlem.
There. Yeah. Well, it's nice
now.
They
will pick you up there.
People are, you know, I mean, the whole, there's certain areas that are just completely changing now.
Yeah, renovated. Gentrified.
Is that what it is? That's what's going on? Are people pissed off about it?
Some people are.
I bet.
People can't afford the rents.
I bet. So we're going to talk in a minute about, you know, the newspapers are sort of shifting gear. Local papers are starting to show a little dissent or maybe a little honesty. We'll get into that in a minute. But right now, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So thank God for the machine. We got the Wi-Fi headline translator, the iNews 5000. Let's feed it some headlines. Right. Here we go. From Business Week, forecasters predict drop in deficit. Forecasters predict drop in deficit. Translation, forecasters delirious, indulge in magical thinking. Let me try another one. How about this? Forecasters predict a drop in deficit. Translation, forecasters ride unicorns over rainbow to Pato Gold. All right. From Associated Press, Bush approval a low for recent two-termers. Bush approval, a low for recent two-termer. Translation, Bush approval dips to new Coke levels. Yeah, there you go. There you go. How about this one? Bush approval, a low for recent two-termers. President comes close to becoming country's best failure. I like that one. There you go. From the Scotsman, Elvis fans mark anniversary of his death. Elvis fans mark anniversary of his death today. Translation, Elvis expected at anniversary celebration. All right, so let's, you know, I promised to tell you the bad news about gas prices. Let's talk to you about that a little bit. Gas prices in the last 3 weeks, the average price for all three grades of gas rose about 20 cents to $2.53. But that's just an average. I'm sure my wife in L.A. is paying close to $3.
Yeah.
Prices have risen an average of 70 cents since the beginning of the year and are up 62.7 cents from last August. And it is relentless. It is not going to stop. But OPEC, feeling threatened by alternative energy research, apparently is trying to catch up in light of the fact that there is some momentum to making what they stand for obsolete. Hopefully. Not much, but some. OPEC plans to establish an institute to improve oil production and technology. Not an institute to help other alternative forms of energy, but they're going to try to figure out how to make oil go a little faster, a little longer.
Oh, yeah, the fossil fuel lobby. Yeah.
I like this. Qatar, is that how you pronounce that country?
Yeah.
Qatar's rep to OPEC said, quote, our competitors, the alternative energy providers. Like you said, I'm sure he said it with some sort of like condescending, those bastards.
Yeah.
What do they think? We're busy ending the world here. Are intensely pursuing research programs aimed at reducing the domination of oil and gas in the global energy market. Likewise, we should have our own independent programs, I imagine, to make more oil more efficient. But you know, hopefully we can get some alternative fuels that work. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, it's funny to see, Mark, the way the Bush administration, kind of on the down low, works with those oil producers from the Middle East. Now, you're right that the oil prices keep going up. And it's entirely possible to hit $70 a barrel before very long. And you're going to start seeing, right now, people are still, apparently, not as impacted by this as most people would think. I mean, folks are still going out and buying all these light trucks. They're buying these fuel-inefficient vehicles in record numbers.
Can you
right
say
now.
Credit? Can you say credit? Apparently, these people think that they can still declare bankruptcy eventually, which they can't because of restricting victims' rights legislation put into law by this administration. We're going to talk a little bit about that later. Anti-war views are sneaking into the mainstream press vis-a-vis mourning families. I think that's a very important thing, given that Cindy Sheehan is raising the consciousness of peace in this country as we speak. But apparently, newspapers around the country are increasingly reporting, you know, negative sentiment on behalf of mourning families who have lost children in the Iraq War.
Yeah, and many of these families, by the way, are Bush supporters. Many of these families are people who supported the war wholeheartedly, but maybe in their grief, and I'm sure that's how Bush is going to try and frame it, that they're upset, they're, you know, they've lost a loved one. But what we're seeing now is the media not omitting these kinds of comments when they are brought up. In many instances in the past, I believe over the last year and a half to 2 years, when these kinds of things were said, they were not always reported.
Right.
Now we're starting to see a change.
And this isn't, I guess, I don't want to put the wrong frame on this. This isn't activism. This is just, you know, good reporting, given the fact that we have a president that refuses to attend military funerals. We have a press that was afraid of the president, so they didn't report any sort of anti-war sentiment on behalf of grieving families who lost their children in a war based on lies. And that attitude becomes manifest symbolically in the guy today. Just this morning, a pickup truck tore through the rows of white crosses that were set up along the side of the road in Crawford to represent the dead soldiers in Iraq during this protest that Cindy Sheehan is a part of down there in Crawford. And a white pickup, as a part of a counter protest, just ran over the white crosses symbolizing the war dead. And if that isn't a bigger symbol or metaphor for just the sentiments of this administration and for the ignorance of people that refuse to see the truth about the war, I don't know what is. And on top of everything else, President Bush finally decides after, you know, after this week and a half of Cindy Sheehan, you know, being out there, you know, and demanding that he talk to her, he finally conceded today to have a meeting with Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important to know that our president, in the face of what is a cultural and popular dissent from this war, really is going to take some time to ride a bike with a professional athlete.
You know, it's amazing to me that Bush, and I got to figure, Mark, that at some point he may just decide, as a spur of the moment thing, to actually meet with Cindy Sheehan. How painful could this be for him? The excuses and the rationales that he's given, well, I have my life to get on with, or whatever that was he said the other day, simply do not hold water. And the longer he does not meet with Cindy Sheehan, the bigger a force she becomes. And I think sooner or later his political people are going to say, you know what, you need to go out there and meet with her before this starts to consume you.
Yeah, well, I mean, the idea that getting on with your life means taking a bike ride with Lance Armstrong is pretty heinous. It's almost like a slap in the face. It's a type of arrogance that is mind-blowing. And the amazing thing is Lance Armstrong has spoken out against the war.
Yeah, he is definitely anti-war. I assume Bush knows that. I'm hoping that the president doesn't try any stunts to, you know, impress this guy, because you know he's going to hurt himself if he does.
Well, that's all right with me. Let him hurt himself. Let the guy make a fool out of himself. I'm going to quote Lance Armstrong here because it's been documented. It was in USA Today. Funding, this is a quote from Lance Armstrong, quote, funding for cancer research is tough to come by these days. The biggest downside to a war in Iraq is what you could do with that money. What does a war in Iraq cost a week? $1 billion, maybe $1 billion a day? The budget for the National Cancer Institute is $4 billion. That's the annual budget, I think, that he's referring to.
Yeah.
That has to change. It needs to become a priority again. Quote, polls say people are much more afraid of cancer than a plane flying into their house or a bomb or any other form of terrorism. It is a priority for the American public, end quote. So, you know, this is framed around his battle with cancer and the complete waste of money, of the government's money, on this war, putting that into the pockets of, military contractors and war profiteering.
Well, you know, I would hope Lance Armstrong understands that to some extent he's being used as a photo op by the president to try and turn attention away from what Cindy Sheehan is talking about.
Yeah, there's some people believe that he's got, political aspirations of his own. It's not clear on which side he stands on, but, I mean, he is... You know, this is one of the things that athletes do,
yeah,
that, you know, if they are not politicized, which he is being politicized, but he is an athlete, and athletes meet with presidents. That's what they do.
Oh, yeah, that is what they do, and I'm sure most athletes would not turn down an opportunity to meet with the president, but maybe, just maybe, Lance Armstrong can prevail on the president to do the right thing.
Well, you know, the president's gone out of his way to sort of like, this is like some bit of business. It is a photo op, but he's sort of paying lip service to the fact, you know, exercise is very important,
yeah,
you know, for all Americans. You know, he's doing his little number about exercise, and they should. I'll tell you, man, after this DVD I saw yesterday, I just tried to enjoy a sad pint of ice cream last night, bro. And, I watched this DVD with this vegetarian, you know, propaganda DVD. There's a lot of truth in it, and I am half a vegetarian, you know. I, I eat fish, but after watching this thing, I think I should be grazing. I should be grazing in organic fields, not eating meat, but literally just eating, you know, live, raw, green food constantly.
What about legumes, man? You
can eat all that stuff's fine, but I got to dig them up and cook them. But the whole meat thing, that I am just a cholesterol bomb waiting to explode, even if I don't eat red meat, man. I watched this thing last night. Man, I'll tell you one thing. It ruined my pint of ice cream. So when we come back, guess who's running for president? And you tell me whether it's true or not. Christopher Walken. Let's get into that. 45 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Otasa katata matita. Hear my voice, idolaters, snucklers at the teats of beasts, and every guy named Ron in Hoboken. This is MILF Cardinal Milfington of Rapture Watch. Because I always want to know the latest on what Satan and his toad-licking minions are up to, I listen to the Morning Sedition Monday through Friday, every hubdominal, look it up, from 6 to 9 a.m. here on Air America Radio.
Fifty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Wake up, sheeple. It's Tuesday. Hope you're feeling all right. Hope things are picking up for you. I hope it's not screwed up already. I hope it couldn't be screwed up already, could it? I don't know. You know, sometimes I wake up screwed up. I did this morning, and I was mean to my wife on the phone, which is no good. No good, and I apologize.
Are you apologizing on the air?
I'm apologizing just to the ether, to out there. I'm apologizing to all women for my behavior. I'm apologizing to all women. Christopher Walken in 2008, what do you make of that? Hang out a minute, I'll tell you. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. That's a good one, Tim. Why don't you take your time on putting that music on? Iraqi lawmakers have delayed the deadline for drafting the country's constitution. It turns out that they haven't addressed the question of women's rights, the role of Islam, and possible Kurdish autonomy. In other words, who will actually be in the country and exactly what kind of country it will be. Wow, long joke and I screwed it up. On the upside, all parties have agreed that the final draft of the constitution should use Times New Roman as a font. That's funny. President Bush will go for a bike ride with Lance Armstrong while he's on vacation. Armstrong is meeting with the president despite the fact that he is opposed to the war in Iraq. Besides, this isn't the first time he's dealt with a malignant testicle.
Ooh.
Bush decided that falling on his face in front of Lance Armstrong would be less humiliating than doing the same thing in front of Cindy Sheehan. For Clinton, Presidential Foundation will release a CD of Bill Clinton's favorite jazz music. The Clinton Presidential Foundation will release a CD of Bill Clinton's favorite music. It's the kind of music that makes you want to kick back, relax with a cigar and a fat chick. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. And I say chick with a certain degree of reverence. Mm-hmm. Okay, ladies? All right? Broads, skirts, dames, don't get offended. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Repeat after me. Iran, it sounds a lot like Iraq. Wake up, sheeple. Iraq was just a warm-up. Get ready for the finality. Finale. Damn it. You know, this cold's killing me. It's killing me. The Sudafed is I'm brain skid mode. I'm going to try this all over again. All right? Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Repeat after me. Iran. It sounds like Iraq. Wake up, sheeple. Iraq was just the warm-up. Get ready for the finale. Iran is going to be everyone's final act. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Man, oh, man. I had to take the Sudafed. I had no choice, Riley. So now I'm kind of speedy and kind of ditzy.
Uh-oh.
That's all right, man. I'm enjoying it. You know, a guy like me, 6 years sober, you get an opportunity to take a little Sudafed and get a buzz on. Why not? So someone hit me to this website, and I'd like you to go to it if you're not in a car. And if you have that capability to do it in your car, go ahead and go online in your car, www.walkin2008.com, the official homepage of the Walkin 2008 campaign, Christopher Walken for president, folks. And I'll tell you, you know, you look at this site, and you have a minute where you're like, is this real? Is it not real? And they've got quotes. It's set up beautifully. It's pretty funny, you know. And I took a, we had to get validation on whether it was real or not real. And you know what? I'm not going to tell you whether it's real or not real. I want you to go and enjoy the site and decide whether walking is your man in 2008, I think, is really what you got to be thinking about now. And Bill Clinton is apparently, the Clinton Foundation is releasing a CD of his favorite jazz songs, if that's important to you. That's coming out. They're not just jazz songs, apparently. They're just his favorite music, apparently. Yes, former Bill Clinton is, yes, he's releasing a CD. Some people thought that it should be called The Joy of Sax.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of funny. But it's called the Bill Clinton Collection, selections from the Clinton Music Room. There's My One and Only Love by John Coltrane, Harlem Nocturne by David Sanborn.
Why the Virgin by David Sanborn? Why not the Viscounts? That's the original.
Exactly. My Funny Valentine by Miles Davis, Summertime by Zoot Sims. Those are nice.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, Chelsea Morning by Judy Collins. All right. You know.
Okay. And I wish I knew how it would be to be, feel to be free, which is a Nina Simone standard.
Yeah.
Great piece of music.
She's intense, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know a lot about her, and I've listened to some of her music, but she's one that just awe-inspiring talent.
Oh, look, many years ago, back in the day, she came up to WBLS.
When you were here.
Yes, when I was here. And a caller called up and asked her if she was going to sing a particular song at a performance. And she just, like, went off.
Really?
You're the reason why I don't sing that song anymore. People like you call. I said, oh, man.
And now the way times have changed is that if someone were giving a concert now, they'd engage they'd have AOL trying to dictate, have people vote on what their song list would be. And
Nina Simone by request. I don't think so.
Exactly. Here's another one. If all you morons who spent $10,000 on a flat screen TV, it's time to start feeling crappy. Yeah, because as you knew it would happen, you couldn't wait, but it's, the prices are dropping to about 35% cheaper now. That's amazing. It happens with all technology. That's why I waited on my iPod, because iPods were like, how much were they, $500,000?
Down to $250.
Like a year ago, now they're $250.
Well, you know what's happened with these flat screens, and this is both plasma and LCDs. There are more and more manufacturers getting into them now.
Right.
And as more of them come on the market, they're undercutting each other's prices so that now the Sony that used to cost you $7,000, you can get probably for about $3,500.
This is one of the reasons why I am proud to say that I am resistant. I'm not stingy, but I generally find that I don't need things for a good long while.
Yeah, me too.
Like the iPod. It took me a long time to get that. I enjoy it, and I'm having a good time with it. I'm not going crazy anymore. I've leveled off. It's working well. But like with the flat screen TV, I'm one of those guys, I'm like, I got a TV, it works all right, I can see the picture.
My sentiments exactly.
But tell me something, Riley. Don't you go into these stores sometimes and look at those things and go, damn.
I went, when I did that? At the 2000 Democratic Convention in Los Angeles, they had plasma screen TVs, and it was brand new then.
Yeah.
Plasma screen TVs all over the Staples Center.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at these, and I said, wow, these fish are getting ready to jump out of
exactly.
here. Exactly. It's whoa.
And that's how they get you, because you start to realize, and I'm just fortunate, I think we're both fortunate, that we're not the kind of people. My brother's a little like this. My brother sees something he likes, he's like, I got to get that now. I got to get it now. I don't care. I got to get it now. And me, I'm like, wow, it's kind of cool, but I'm not going to get it yet. And then over about a year or 6 months to a year, I start going, that's really pretty good, isn't it? Like my brain takes a while to process it.
You know what's lucky for me? The only thing I get obsessive and anal about like that is music.
Yeah.
I will hunt down a piece of music if I want, and it doesn't cost as much as a flat screen TV.
No, it's good times though too. I like that you do that. I like that you go out into the world to find it too.
Oh yeah,
you go on the internet for a while, and they're like, "No, I'm going to give you an excuse to get out and go to that music store."
There you go.
So we're going to give away some Dave Chappelle DVDs in the very near future here.
Can I have one?
Yeah, no. I think so. I think we can probably arrange one. We're going to talk to Cindy Sheen in a little while, hopefully, and hopefully you'll stay with us for that. 57 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's 6 past the hour. Good morning. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Wake up, sheeple. Hope you're doing okay. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Hope everything's all right with you this morning. You're starting off easy and okay and not freaking out too much like I did this morning. I'll tell you, it's been a weird 24 hours. Riley, I sit down last night. I got this cold. I'm fighting it. I know I'm not supposed to eat dairy because I got a cold. So I decide, I'm too sad to have a cold. I'm angry. I'm going to go out, get a pint of vanilla ice cream, sit down, decide to watch this DVD that a listener sent me because she knows I'm half a vegetarian. I don't eat meat. I just eat the fish. Obviously, I eat a little dairy. I throw it in, and it's one of those DVDs where it's sort of like, if you eat any meat at all, anything related to meat,
you are going to die.
Yeah, this is what your heart looks like. And they cut to, like, open heart surgery, and they're showing the insides of veins, and they're showing, you know, them cutting chicken beaks off. And I'm trying just to have a good pint of ice
chicken
cream.
Chicken beaks in the inside of your heart.
Oh, man. Dude, it was brutalizing. But, you know, it's planted some seeds in my head, and, you know, maybe I should, I don't know. Am I going to live forever?
Yeah, but look, you know what? Anyways. If they open up your chest, your heart is not going to look pretty.
When can I walk into a health food store and just say, hey, buddy, how about a stem cell smoothie? You know, when can I walk into a health food store and can I get the Roto-Rooter shake that's going to clean out all my arteries and literally I just start sweating out lard? When does that happen? Can I live long enough for that to happen where it can be easy? Why does it all have to require discipline and exercise and good eating habits? Where's the easy way? I don't know if that's going to happen.
Ask our
Riley.
President. He's the easy way guy.
Let's ask the ghost of Elvis. In 1977, Elvis left his life on the toilet in Memphis. That is this day in history.
Yes.
The great Elvis Presley degenerated into a horrendous prescription drug addict and horrendous obesity and was a pretty sad man at the end. This is the anniversary of his death. Though he did do some amazing rock and roll music. In 1948, Babe Ruth struck out in the big game. Throat cancer took, what'd they call him, the Gipper? Was Babe the Gipper?
No. The Sultan of Spain.
The Bambino.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. I'm not a sports guy. Was he? And yet the Yankee Clipper was Joe DiMaggio. Yes. I knew that. Hey, how do you like that?
There you go.
Bing. Hey, do I have that? Bing. Somewhere. How about that one? Yeah, okay. I won the jackpot.
There
that's
you
all right.
Go.
That sound will work. All right. Someday I'll be able to work that like a piano. In 1956, Bela Lugosi really went to sleep in a coffin. He died. I don't know exactly how he died, but he was an old
heart
junkie.
Attack.
He had a heart attack.
He had a heart attack. He was working on Plan 9 from Outer Space,
mm-hmm.
which was the Ed Wood movie that was later satirized in the movie Ed Wood.
Well, it wasn't really satirized, was it? It was more of a movie about it.
I guess so.
You know, I think that if you were to ask Tim Burton, what he was doing, I think he was trying to actually
homage.
I think he was doing a homage. The Constitution in Iraq has been delayed. The deal breaker on Monday appeared to be the refusal by leaders of the Sunni minority to grant wide autonomy and control of oil income to the southern Shiite majority. Also, there's an issue with the Kurds' autonomy, and there was also, the very important issue was women weren't even mentioned in a constitution that is leaning towards Sharia. And that, of course, another issue in and of itself.
Absolutely. And what you saw happening, if published reports are to be believed, as the deadline got closer, you know, they eventually came and went public at midnight with this extension. But apparently certain things that they thought were settled turned out not to be settled. The Kurds thought they had a deal on autonomy. Suddenly somebody jumped on and said, well, no, we have no deal on autonomy. The Shiites thought that they had a deal on this demand they had for their clergy council to be seen as independent of the government and not having to answer to the government. Mm-hmm. Suddenly that wasn't a deal. Every group here thought they had an agreement on something and then turned out they didn't.
Right. Did I mention we're going to be giving away some Dave Chappelle CDs? We are.
Yeah.
We're going to have these Dave Chappelle DVDs of uncensored Showtime special. We're going to have a little contest with that. Mark Riley's going to be on New York One tonight doing some post-debate analysis after the New York City Democratic mayoral candidates face off.
Yeah.
Also, like as you recall from last week, the Pentagon is sponsoring a massive march in Washington and a country music concert to mark the fourth anniversary of 9/11. How distasteful is that? They are literally doing a celebration of the 9/11 massacres and their attempts. They are going to try to relink 9/11 and Iraq. Now, what is good news today is that the Washington Post announced yesterday that it will back out of a sponsorship role in the event because of flack they were catching from critics. And they should have caught flack. This is a newspaper that reported that there was no link between Iraq and 9/11, yet they were sponsoring an event by giving free advertising space to a Pentagon-sponsored march where they hijacked the symbolism of the civil rights movement to publicize and try to reconnect Iraq and 9/11 in a big propaganda parade that was going to lead to Clint Black singing. This is Clint Black, the guy who did Iraq and Roll.
Yeah.
The paper said that they pulled out because of fear of it becoming politicized. Really? Really? You just realize that? The Pentagon is sponsoring it. It might be politicized. What a ridiculous, lame excuse.
I'll tell you what. I think it came from pressure from within the Washington Post's own newsroom about the ethical question. Remember, the journalists at the Washington Post have to hew to a pretty high standard, and I think many of them felt that the Post sponsorship of this event didn't meet that same standard.
I think you're absolutely right. Get ready to confess, folks. 866-303-2270. You know, work it out. Do you have anything eating at you? Sometimes it's not easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, there's this cat in my neighborhood. It's sort of mine, but not really. I mean, I started feeding it a while back.
So you're feeding a stray. That's nice.
Yeah, but Riley, it's the way that I feed the stray that's not so nice.
You know, I'm almost afraid to ask.
Well, okay. I really only feed it on weeknights, you know, on my way to work. I kind of blow it off on weekends, and sometimes, like, if I'm going out of town, I'll actually blow it off for, like, a week.
I see.
And I, of course, I feel guilty because I know the cat kind of depends on me now, and I'm not there for it, right? But I rationalize it like that by not feeding the cat on weekends and when I'm on vacation, that the cat's wild, you know? So it probably gets back to its roots, you know? It hunts for food and, you know what I mean, when I'm not there. Plus, it you know what? This cat never shows up to thank me. It just eats the food and when I'm gone and doesn't show up to thank me. Occasionally it does, but...
What's this cat's name, the cat that doesn't thank you and thus offends you?
I didn't name it, Riley. Plus, it hangs out with this other cat that seems a lot cooler because I don't see it that much. And I feel like the other cat has its, like, wild thing all wrapped up nice and tight. And I would almost prefer to feed that cat, you know what I'm saying?
Feed the cooler cat when it's convenient for you to feed it because it doesn't need you so much because it's cooler, the cat?
Oh, God. Listeners are going to hate me, but people have to realize, folks, I saved like 5 cats from certain death. I found 2 homes for cats. I kept 3 of them. I feed them constantly, but they're like little fat princesses. So in the cat karma world, I feel like they owe me. Do you understand?
Have you told this story to the stray, Mark? Does it understand your rationalization?
All right, okay, I know. I'm being a jerk.
Okay, I think I have your penance.
All right, hit me, Brother Riley.
First, you have to name the cat.
Okay.
And you have to find someone to feed it when you're out of town and on the weekends.
But who, man? I just...
You're like a crazy cat lady. Just find another one like you.
Okay, all right.
And I want you to take the cat to the vet and get its shots. Get it a checkup and do the same for his cooler cat buddy.
All right, is that it?
No. I'm going to have fun listening to you defend yourself from the vicious cat community that will be calling in shortly. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. We'll be hearing from you momentarily, 15 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes. Yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Nineteen past the hour, in just a few minutes, we're going to make a Dave Chappelle fan very happy. His TV show may be dead, but Sony Entertainment is releasing Dave's uncensored Showtime special on DVD, and we're giving away 5 copies. We're going to start that contest in just a few minutes, so stay tuned to win a copy of Dave Chappelle's For What It's Worth on DVD. Right now, we're taking some confessions. Got a full board of people that have sinned. 866-303-2270 is the number if you're curious, if you want to confess. All right, Dave in Boulder, what is your sin, Dave?
Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mark and Mark.
Hey, man.
Well, I've always been a fairly good liberal, I think, my whole life, and I've always basically gravitated towards work that made me happy rather mm-hmm. than trying to make money, the bottom line. And here, 20 years later, after getting out of college and stuff, I'm 39, basically broke. I'm a cabbie. And my latest thing, which, you know, this is fine and everything, but then lately I've become sickly addicted to online gambling.
Oh, Dave, so you're not getting out of the house much, huh?
Not at all.
Oh,
I can't even sleep. I'm actually about ready to enroll. I'm going to register for my next free roll tournament in about 40 minutes.
Wow, so and it's literally the middle of the night there, and you are... All right, well, here's a couple of things, Dave. You've got a real problem, all right?
Number one,
you know, in terms of the compulsive behavior, you're going to have to deal with that somehow. Are you winning or losing, Dave?
Neither. It's actually, this is the ridiculous part, too. I actually am not playing for money right now.
Oh. All right, well, then raise the stakes. Go to Vegas.
See, I used to blog obsessively, and I still blog, but now my wife
is this compulsive gambling for no money problem as well. I think that what you ought to do is think about the amount of time you're wasting at just getting these weird moments of instant gratification. So I think that maybe you should go back, as a penance, if I might offer you to plead with you to go back to traditional masturbation. And please start blogging again and speaking your mind about politics. Get back in there and get back active. You know, this stuff is just going to disconnect you from the world. You're acting like a rodent in an experiment.
I don't know what to do, though, man. I'm still going to enroll for the next one. But then I'll quit. I'll quit after that one.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that before.
Well, in all honesty, if you do think you have a compulsive gambling problem, it seems like your life is only unmanageable in the context of it's eating all your time. But if you start losing money, you might want to call for help.
That's true.
Okay, thanks, buddy. Thanks, Dave. Take it easy. Yeah.
Wow.
I tried to get him back into the right mode there, you know what I mean? It's like, it's that gratification, that thrill of winning. And gambling with no money is one thing. I don't have that gambling thing. As soon as I lose money, the thrill is gone, my friends. Yes, Kevin, listening in Austin, Texas. Kevin, what's going on, man?
What's up?
What's your sin, my friend?
Good morning, guys.
Hey.
I went to a gentleman's club and used bill money that I was supposed to pay the light bill with.
So you're supposed to pay your electricity bill, but instead you went to a strip club.
I did.
And put it down some woman's cleavage.
More than one.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God.
It was the best time that I ever had, though, and I'd been previous to that, telling people, there's no way I would do that. It's a waste of money, blah, 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 blah. But it was the best $89 they ever spent.
Oh, really? Was that good, huh? Is it going to be worth sitting in the dark reflecting?
Well, yeah, how are you going to invite anybody over if you got no lights?
Well, fortunately, I've got means to replace that money. It's just that I haven't gotten around telling the missus about...
Oh, the missus!
Yeah. The little woman's not listening, is she?
Not at this present time.
Oh, okay.
Kevin, man, this is a rough penance, man. I wish I could be funny about it, but, if you really want to clear your conscience, you're going to have to cop to this dude.
Yeah. Confess. You're going to have to confess to your wife.
That's the best you can do for me?
No! Oh. All right, here, how about this? Why don't you take all the rest of the money that you have out of your account and out of your joint account and just go on a bender? Go to Vegas, go back to the strip bar, live it up for like 2 weeks until all the money's gone, and then see, and then call us back.
Yeah.
I love you guys.
You haven't hit bottom yet, man. Call us when you hit bottom. Thanks, Kevin.
That's hard, Baron. Live it up.
I tell him to be honest, and I just don't think he's hit the wall hard enough yet.
If the missus is still home when you get back.
Oh, man. Yeah, all these, this is interesting. That's two compulsive ones. That's two, not the standard sort of liberal
confessions. I carry a gun, yeah.
All right, here we go. Let's get into this contest now, if we could. Right, we're going to give away a copy of Dave Chappelle's Uncensored Showtime special, Dave Chappelle for What It's Worth on DVD. And the kind folks at Sony Pictures Home Entertainment are letting us give away copies every day this week. The DVD just hit the streets today, so instead of going out and buying it on the streets, all you have to do, I got my buddy Keith, he gets things years before anyone else does because he gets them on the street.
Yeah.
All you have to do is listen to us. Okay, here's the catch. We only want to give these out to Dave Chappelle fans. We know that a lot of people became fans of Chappelle's show, Chappelle, because of his TV show. So to win the DVD, we're going to play a clip from the show, and you're going to have to tell us what person Chappelle was impersonating. Now, some of these are pretty easy. For instance, most people know this one.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
I would hope. That obviously was Chappelle playing the late Rick James. So it's going to be a little tougher than that. All right, here's today's quip. And when we open the phones, you can call in to win Dave Chappelle's Uncensored Showtime Special on DVD. Ready? Here it is.
Can you stop yelling at me, please?
No, I can't stop yelling, because that's how I talk. You ain't never seen my movies.
All right, you got that? Now, since this is the first day we're giving these away, we'll make it a little easier on you, all right? We're going to play a second clip.
Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell.
He's funny, man.
Yeah.
All right. So who is Chappelle impersonating? The phones are now open, 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. We'll get a winner when Morning Sedition continues in just a few minutes. You know, it's weird. I tell you, I remember when Chappelle started, Riley.
Mm.
Well, I was down at the Boston Comedy Club where we hung out. This was years ago. The kid must have been like 16 or 17 years old.
Uh-oh.
He came up from D.C. with this other kid, Dave Edwards, and his hero, Tony Woods. And I remember the first time that kid started going on stage. And, you know, people just knew. They just knew that he was going to pop eventually.
He was a natural.
And he certainly got a lot of great opportunities. And, you know, you listen. Like, we were listening to some of the Chappelle stuff in the office yesterday. Just see the... You know, this last season, it was a shame that he couldn't do it, but I understood what happened. You know, there's a lot of pressure on him to rise up to the level of comedy that was coming out of just some guys having a good time.
Yeah.
You know when the good time stops and the pressure's on?
Yeah, when you sign for 50 mil.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen, but we do have these people on the phone. Let's see who wins. It's 27 past the hour. We're going to have Cindy Sheehan in a little while, and, you know, stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
Can you stop yelling at me, please?
No, I can't stop yelling, because that's how I talk. You ain't never seen my movie.
Yeah, 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're in the middle of a Chappelle DVD giveaway.
Yeah.
We're going to be giving them away all week from Sony Entertainment, the Uncensored Showtime Special on DVD, Dave Chappelle's For What It's Worth. The question was this, which character is Dave Chappelle playing here?
Can you stop yelling at me, please?
No, I can't stop yelling, because that's how I talk. You ain't never seen my movies.
Or maybe this one, if that didn't get you.
Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell.
All right, so if you're a Chappelle fan, Gary, listening on Metro North, going, you're on the train. What do you got, Gary?
Hey, Gary.
Hey, man, I'm in the tunnel between 125th and Grand Central.
That's unbelievable. You're still on the phone. Who is it?
That's Sam Jackson, biatch.
All right, man. All right, Gary. So you're today's winner. Thanks. Stay on the line so Brendan can get your information. Good job, man. Sam Jackson is the right answer. He's in the tunnel. That's amazing. He must have been destined to win this thing.
Yeah, really.
How the hell do you get reception in the cell in the tunnel?
Persistence.
All right, man. You know, we've got a hell of a week this week, Riley. We got Dick Cavett tomorrow in the studio. That's amazing. I want to ask him some questions because you and I were talking about early television. Obviously, he wasn't around for early television, but even when I was watching those Dick Cavett shows in the past, they just released a bunch of him talking to rock icons. The tone and quality of the audience and the nature of the intimacy of the medium was much different. And he ran a very sort of intimate show. It's going to be interesting to talk to him.
Well, you know, one of the things that Cavett did was take that whole generation of people that were anti-war and the people that were into rock and not just have them come out and perform like Ed Sullivan and them did, but actually sat down and spoke to them like they were actual human beings.
Yeah, and Jim Wolcott made a good point yesterday is that at the time, you know, these guys, a lot of the musicians, they're barely savvy now. You know, musicians are not known for their social graces necessarily, you know?
No.
So, you know, back then, they certainly didn't have the type of MTV disposition, the type of prepared personality, the type of person that knows how to handle themselves in an interview situation. So the gaps in narrative, the gaps airtime, the dead air, so to speak, was definitely, there was plenty of that. It was some uncomfortable television, but very engaging. Michael McKean from Spinal Tap and Best in Show will be here with Bob Balaban from Gosford Park and Waiting for Guffman. They're working on something together. They're going to be here tomorrow. That's another great couple of guests. Later in the week, we've got actress Natasha Richardson. And when we're up at this Friday up in Harlem on 116th Street at Amy Roof's, we got Mick Foley, Bret Easton Ellis, Mike B., very funny comic who I've known for years. It's going to be great.
He's the only black guy on the bill?
He's the only black guy in the bill, and you. And, you know, maybe somebody else will show up.
Well, I haven't confirmed.
Yeah, yes, you have, man. You're definitely in. Listen to this. Now, these people are the enemy, of course, the American Tort Reform Association, which is backed, obviously, by the insurance, drug, auto, and other major industries, that they state this is the people that want to restrict victims' rights in order to honor business interests over individual crises or problems on illegal standing. 49 states, this is according to the American Tort Reform Association, 49 states have enacted at least one measure on the group's wish list over the last two decades. That's including limits on punitive damages and caps on awards for pain and suffering and medical malpractice claims. All right. Now this is the interesting thing about the American Tort Association is that they are actually reporting that, 2-1, that respondents believe lawsuits harm the economy and stifle job creation, and that, people take advantage of suing. And, and that's understandable when you read some of these stories, Riley. I mean, I'm reading some of these stories, here's an interesting case here. Merv Grzynski set his Winnebago on cruise control, walked back into the cabin of the Winnebago to get some coffee. The Winnebago crashed. Grzynski blamed the manufacturer for not warning against such a maneuver in the owner's manual. He sued and won for $1.75 million.
Wow.
Yeah. A recent case in Portland, Oregon, a jury awarded $1.6 million to a woman who was seriously disfigured in a botched liposuction surgery. But, it wasn't the doctor. Here's the catch. The jury imposed the judgment on the publisher of a phone directory after concluding that the company had knowingly allotted a dermatologist to falsely advertise himself as board certified. Dig mm-hmm. that. Here's another case. Dig this. Carol Walton, a Delaware woman so eager to avoid a $3.50 cover charge, she tried sneaking into a nightclub through a bathroom window and fell and lost a couple of teeth. She sued and won $12,000 plus payment of dental bills. Now, you hear stories like that, and you can understand.
Yeah.
You could understand why people would believe that lawsuits are gratuitous, and how tort reform is absolutely the right way to go, because it's obviously these people are getting away with murder. How about this one? Amber Carson of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, who got into an argument with her boyfriend in a restaurant, threw a drink at him, and then broke her tailbone when she slipped on the wet spot on the floor. All right, she sued and won $113,500. Now, these cases, are very interesting, okay? They're very interesting, and they're all very similar to the case of the woman who spilt that hot coffee on her lap, the McDonald's woman.
Yeah.
Now, that case, obviously has been, characterized as a frivolous lawsuit, and, the weird thing about all of these is that, really think about them, because when we come back for the break, I'm going to share something with you about these lawsuits that might just blow your mind. Okay, so hang out. It's 40 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition. Now how's that gonna look in a deposition? I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. Now to clear my name.
Next message.
Morning Sedition. Fighting treason. With reason. This is Air America Radio.
Five past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Air America Radio. You there?
Yeah.
There he is. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Hope you're having an okay morning. We're in the middle of a conversation about what they call tort reform, what we call restricting victims' rights. Lawton Smalls is going to be with us in just a few minutes. What I shared with you before the break were several examples of lawsuits. I'm going to share with you again. Now, you understand what tort reform is and why the conservatives frame it that way and why the progressives and liberals frame it restricting victims' rights is that, you know, tort reform means legislating in favor of big business, and in that is, you know, sacrificing the rights of the individual, of the citizen, over the rights of big business. Like if you're in a Walmart and a box falls off a shelf and cripples you, they will favor Walmart. That is basically what tort reform does in most cases. They override victims' rights, and the Tort Reform Association is very careful in terms of propaganda distribution and in terms of trying to sway cultural opinion their direction in demonizing the victims of heinous acts of corporate oversight and ruling in favor of the corporation. Now, the cases I discussed with you, I want you to listen to again. First, it's Merv Grzinski and his Winnebago. Merv Grzinski has a Winnebago. He had it on cruise control. He went into the back cabin to get some coffee. The Winnebago crashed. He sued the company for not putting that in the owner's manual, for not stating in the owner's manual that he couldn't put it on cruise control and go into the back while it was driving. He won $1.75 million. The other case is in Oregon. A jury awarded $1.6 million to a woman who was seriously disfigured in a botched liposuction surgery. The trick to this one is the jury imposed a judgment on the publisher of a phone directory after concluding that the company had knowingly allowed a dermatologist to falsely advertise himself as a board-certified plastic surgeon. The other case, Carol Walton, a woman so eager to avoid a $3.50 cover charge that she tried sneaking into a nightclub through a bathroom window, fell, lost a couple of teeth, sued the club for $12,000, got it, and the payment of dental bills. And then Amber Carson of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, got into an argument with her boyfriend in a restaurant, threw a drink at him, then broke her tailbone when she slipped on the wet spot on the floor. She sued, won $113,500. Now, There's the question. Which one of those is actually a real story? Which one of those is actually a real lawsuit? You know, which one? And I'll tell you which one. None of them. None of them, all right? None of them. They're all propaganda distributed by the Tort Reform Association or by people that sympathize with the cause of big business over individual rights. And the thing is, people love this kind of crap, Riley. This is why, also why people, on some level, it's why people listen to radio. It's why people watch reality television. It's why people watch Springer, why they watch Maury. It's why they watch a lot of things, is that you want, you know, there's a part of the human being that, you know, when you hear a story like this, even if you find out it's false. Hear me out. This is how framing works, according to George Lakoff. The story about the Winnebago. Even though now you know it's a lie, didn't you picture that guy putting it on autopilot, going to make the coffee, it crashes, and he won a lawsuit? So somewhere in your head, that's already made an impact. So the frame is already there, and on some level, culturally, and even on an individual basis, that makes you think people are idiots, and they'll sue for anything and get away with it.
Well, the public relations manager for Winnebago actually has been flooded with phone calls about this particular story. People calling, asking about, you know, what was the deal with the owner's manual and that sort of thing, and she said that she's repeatedly had to explain that there was no lawsuit and that they didn't have to change the owner's manual.
Right. Well, the thing is that this is trying to sway public opinion towards believing that the real victims are these corporations and businesses that get sued by individuals who have been wronged. See, that's what this whole propaganda effort is in order to get people to think that people are actually frivolous in their lawsuits, and the percentage is not true. They've already passed legislation that disables people's ability to change states to make suits. They have to go, a lot of them have to go to federal court now, right?
Yeah.
And then it's thrown out in federal court. But the bottom line is that they are trying to sway public opinion to believe that individuals take advantage of the legal system, and the numbers prove that that is false.
But, you know, the other numbers, the numbers of people who believe some of this stuff, not the specifics of these lawsuits, but the idea that people, large numbers of people are taking advantage of the system, those numbers have been going up, which means that even planting these phony stories has had the desired effect.
Right.
That's the amazing
thing. Well, this is all based on the original story. This is all based on the exploitation and the misunderstanding of the lawsuit brought against McDonald's by the woman who, Stella Liebeck, who sued McDonald's for $3 million because of injuries suffered when she spilled a cup of coffee in her lap, okay? Yeah. A pro-torter, or those who want to restrict or deny victims' rights over the rights of corporations and businesses, like to characterize this as the epitome of a frivolous lawsuit, but the facts really prove otherwise. I mean, the testimony in the case showed that the coffee was 180 to 190 degrees, and what is that? McDonald's coffee was, it's, dude, 180 degrees? You couldn't even make coffee at home that was that hot.
They have been getting complaints. They had paid out $500,000 in settlements in the previous decade after receiving 700 separate complaints about hot coffee.
Right, Gary, Gary in Georgia, listen next time. How are you, buddy?
Hey.
Hey, bud.
So what's on your mind?
That's what I was, the little old lady you were talking about.
Yeah,
yeah. McDonald's coffee.
Yeah.
Somebody imposed a gag order. One side or the other imposed a gag order after the suit was settled or after she won, whatever.
Yeah.
I would assume it was probably McDonald's because they didn't want everybody to know what the hell the story was.
Right.
But yeah that was, I got so sick and tired of people, a lot of people that I knew were, that was what they would bring up. I'd say, well, hold it a minute.
Yeah.
You don't know the real story. You don't know the number of people who were hurt. You don't know how many times McDonald's was warned. You don't know how hot their coffee was. Now I think it's 155.
That's still pretty hot, isn't it?
Yeah
but most places you go into, like a convenience store or what have you, that coffee's pretty hot to start out with because it has to be.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thanks, Gary. Thanks for your call. The thing is, man. The machines they used them in, they trap the heat, so it's beyond boiling. It's unbelievable. But what he's saying is right. Is that apparently McDonald's had been warned, right, before filing the lawsuit? She wrote McDonald's. This is Stella Liebeck, requesting that it lower the temperature of its coffee and cover her uninsured medical bills and incidental costs of about $20,000. Right? McDonald's offered $800.
Yeah.
As the case neared trial, a mediator recommended McDonald's pay a settlement of $225,000. The company refused. All right. So ultimately, she was awarded $160,000 by a jury in compensatory damages and about $2.7 million in punitive damages. The trial judge slashed the punitive damages by more than 80% to $480,000, and the case was settled for an undisclosed amount. But as Gary was saying, McD's had received at least 700 complaints about this coffee
and
in the previous decade.
And $500,000 worth of settlement money was paid by McDonald's.
And see, the thing is that the Tort Reform Agency, the association, and the pro-torters, they just want to make the victim the blame. All right? Certainly there are frivolous lawsuits out there. Certainly there are lawyers that look to sue for malpractice and frivolous lawsuits. But the bottom line is, it is not the majority. It is not making people lose jobs. It may escalate the cost of corporations or medical malpractice insurance, but that's not even the case. The bottom line is, this accounts for very little jeopardy to the economic system. And all this is about is allowing businesses to conduct business without taking the safety precautions necessary to protect people. And that's what pro-tort is all about, legislating in favor of business and not caring whether people get hurt or die or what their rights are in context of these type of lawsuits.
And that's why business loves the Bush administration.
Exactly.
Because Bush carried this water and bought into the myth. And, a lot of people, just like with the war in Iraq, if they hear it coming out of this guy's mouth for some reason, they believe it to be gospel. They believe it to be true. The fact is, what was it? When we were doing this story some months ago, what was it, 3% of the money that was, I think it was something on the order of 3%. It was certainly nowhere near the amounts necessary to say it had an impact on the economy, it had an impact on jobs, it had an impact on anything.
Yeah. So look, in a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Cindy Sheehan. I hope that this works out and we get through today. But in all honesty, I'm looking forward to talking to her because, just this morning, a pickup truck tore through the rows of white crosses that have been set up along the side of the road there in Crawford, representing the Iraqi war dead as a symbol in honor and a memorial, a sort of roadside memorial set up for them. But a counter-protester, some yahoo in a pickup truck, just plowed over the crosses, the very symbol of the Iraqi war dead that is being, sort of honored there in this temporary encampment that is built growing around Cindy Sheehan. And this is just such a great metaphor for how this administration deals with death in the context of this war. And it just shows how little respect Americans who claim to be true Americans have for the troops. What could be more honoring the troops than trying to get them home as soon as possible? You got a guy across the street from Crawford, from Bush's ranch here, blasting shotgun shells into the air, you know, as some sort of like act of counter protest, some sort of example. These people are anti-American ass kissers who want nothing more than to look like, you know, patriots in the face of a president who took this country to war on a lie. And Casey Sheehan lost his life along with 1,800 plus others. And there's a growing momentum of sympathy and desire to get peace and to get people, the kids back from Iraq. And then he got these idiots. He's going to shoot his gun off. It's just like Easy Rider. It's just like the KKK. It's just like these tactics are tired and dated and don't represent patriotism. They represent belligerence. They represent anti-Americanism, and they represent the worst kind of evil pandering to an administration that that has no respect for human life.
Apparently, Cindy Sheehan met with a soldier from Fort Hood yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, who actually gave her a small stone with a 1st Cavalry insignia painted on it and the pictures of three of his friends who were killed there.
Uh-huh.
So she's obviously drawing support not just from just plain folks or even parents who have lost children, but from soldiers themselves.
Well, that's inspiring, you know, because there are people there that are showing up. It's just, you know, what's really interesting to me, Riley, it's just that there isn't a lot of counter-protesting.
No,
that it's just
minuscule.
It's a couple of yahoos who the type of people that blow their gun into the air and that drive a pickup over memorials are just, it's just such a, it's an American archetype of utter ignorance and contempt and anger and belligerence. It's something that's been around since the beginning of this country in some respects.
Yeah, and it also indicates, I think, subtly, that these folks know that they can't win, not in the end.
Not with this one, you know, and they know that they got to feel a little bit bad about it because that kind of spite comes out of denial. Cindy Sheehan will be on the phone with us shortly. It's 57 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course, lurking conservatives. I'd like to say good morning to my wife, Mishna, and I'm sorry. I'll leave it at that. How would that be?
How's that
for suspense, my friends?
Mm.
In just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to Cindy Sheehan, who is out there in Crawford still, you know, is waiting for George Bush to address her in need to talk to him about her son's death. A lot of people have converged on Crawford, as you know, over the last week or so. Hundreds of protesters from around the world, hundreds of people that are concerned, that are standing alongside Cindy for their own personal reasons, you know, in their own grief and their own desire to get the troops home. Apparently yesterday some yahoo, some anti-American ass, some belligerent douchebag in a pickup truck drove over a bunch of white crosses that were set up along the side of the road there in Crawford as a memorial to the Iraqi war dead, and that was his idea of counter-protest. Just like the guy yesterday who blasted a couple of shots from a shotgun up into the air. This is what counter-protest this is what patriotism looks like on that level, where you're able to, the only thing you're able to do in the face of a woman who has honest grief, an honest request for an explanation from the leader of the free world of why her son had to die for a lie is just like, drive a truck over the crosses. And that's exactly a metaphor for how this administration deals with death in this war and how this administration deals with the denial of what is really happening. The guy across the street shooting his shotgun in the air just wants to make some points with Bush. That's just some belligerent ass-kissing there. But moving on to a couple other things before we talk to Cindy. Apparently, the Iraq Constitution has fallen apart at least for another week.
Well, there was no chance it was going to get done by this deadline of yesterday. There were just too many issues outstanding, too many issues to resolve, and the Bush administration was prepared in its rush to try and make political gain out of this, mm-hmm. they were prepared to say, well, go ahead, paper over all of that stuff, just write the Constitution and deal with that stuff later. And the Iraqis, I think, wisely in this case, said, you know what, we have to straighten this stuff out. Issues like the status of women, do they have the right to inherit, as do men? Are they able to initiate divorce, as do men? The Kurds, of course, want the right to secede from Iraq after a certain period of time. And what they don't say about all this is that if three provinces of Iraq's 18 do not ratify this constitution, it's back to square one anyway.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about it is, too, is that, you know, people wouldn't think, like, why would you need to, you know, directly address the rights of women in a constitution? That's because they are moving towards an Islamic republic. And once the laws of Sharia go into play, the rights of women become negligible.
Yeah.
Completely negligible in terms of, you know, living a life of a free life, to get a job, to dress the way you want to talk to people you want to talk to. I mean, how extreme the rules of Sharia can be is there's no end to it in terms of completely denying a woman of her rights.
Yeah. And the question becomes, of course, too, what happens if you try and institute Sharia throughout Iraq, and the Kurds object? The Kurds have no love for Sharia law,
right.
You know, in and of itself, and they have the best organized militias inside the country.
It's very interesting because Howard Dean on Meet the Press on Sunday said, quote, it looks like today, and this could change as of today, it looks like women will be worse off in Iraq than they were when Saddam Hussein was president of Iraq, end quote. That was Howard Dean, who took a lot of hits from the right for making that statement, calling him, as they like to call him, you know, some sort of Saddam sympathizer, you know, some anti-American stuff. But it turns out Howard Dean was right, and that these laws, you know, need to be addressed, and that this issue needs to be addressed so women have some freedom. I mean, even given that Saddam was a tyrant, he was a killer, he was a horrendous, horrendous ruler, but the truth of the matter is, women could work.
Yeah, and by the way, Saddam, theoretically, should be facing some form of justice in Iraq. Isn't that what's supposed to happen to despots and tyrants?
Yeah, what is happening with that?
You know, yeah.
There's so much chaos right now, and there's so much admission on behalf of officials and people on the ground and some members of this administration that this war, that even the expectations outside of the lies that they used to take us there, the expectations of setting up a functional government or getting people employed or even, you know, rebuilding some of the infrastructure are completely deteriorating. Before we get Cindy Sheehan on the phone, also, it's important to note that not anti-war views, but good journalism is starting to happen in terms of getting a message out in the press that people who lose family members, who lose children in this war are mad, and they're mad that their children had to die because of lies. And it's not just Cindy Sheehan going public with her grief and making this impact. Newspapers around the country are increasingly reporting the anti-war sentiments of family members of the Iraq War dead in their coverage of funerals, which is a new thing, Riley, as we talked about a little earlier, that before they would just omit it.
Yes.
And that's sort of criminal in terms of journalism. And why would you omit that? I mean, this is they were afraid of this president. This is a president that refused to go to a military funeral.
I remember and keep getting drawn back to an African-American man who lost his son in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
And the very strong anti-Bush statements he made immediately after that. And then you didn't hear from him anymore. I mean, that was literally the end of that. The media picked up those anti-Bush statements. The next day, no one remembered who the guy's name was.
Right.
Now we're starting to see more and more people reacting exactly the same way he did, reacting exactly the same way Cindy Sheehan did.
I just don't understand it. I don't understand how anybody, given the information that we have, given the truth of information that we have, given the fact that we were taken into this war on a series of lies, given the fact that this war has become a tremendous failure, and given the fact that they are killing, you know, thousands of civilians, and there's 1,800 plus Americans that are dead. Given all these facts, that are facts out there in the ether, that people can still stand up and defend this president's disposition, this president's point of view, this president's commitment to this thing, and this administration's integrity. How is that possible that there's anybody left in this country that would do that with a clear conscience?
And even if you thought that the Bush was right in going over there for the oil, you know, oil interest alone. In other words, America's national security is dependent on fossil fuels, and the instability of the Saddam regime meant that we should have gone over there anyway. Look at the price of gas.
Yeah.
Look at it. It's been going up ever since we went to Iraq.
Is it just because people feel powerless? I mean, this is the great thing about something about what Cindy Sheehan is doing is that she's down there. She went down there for herself for her own reasons, and all of a sudden she empowered a good part of this nation and around the world. Cindy Sheehan, good morning. It's great to talk to you. We missed you yesterday. How's everything going down there?
Good morning,
guys. Sorry about the confusion yesterday.
That's okay. You all right?
I'm doing okay. Things are getting pretty weird out here. Did you hear about what happened last night?
With the guy with the pickup truck?
Yeah.
What did he do?
Ran over. Well, we have the Arlington West out there. We have 800 crosses with soldiers' names on it. Soldiers who have been killed by Bush's war of aggression and war for power and greed. And we're honoring our soldiers and their losses and their families, and this man came out and ran over 500 of them.
That is unbelievable. What a metaphor for the behavior of this administration. The guy is just a living symbol of what they are.
Exactly. He ran over 500 of the crosses plus 50 American flags.
Unbelievable. That's a real patriot there, huh?
I know, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Cindy, it's amazing.
And with the guy with the shotgun and everything, it's just, we're not hurting anybody. We're being very nice and very kind, and what we're doing is our rights as Americans, and there they are out there trying to say that we're un-American.
Yeah, Cindy, now how did that unfold? Because we didn't get to talk to you about that. This is Bush's neighbor. He just went out on his backyard and blasted off a couple of shots?
Yeah, he fired five shotgun blasts, and I didn't hear it. I didn't even know what was going on. Until the media, we were having a prayer service, and then all of a sudden the media goes running across the road, and I'm like, what the heck's going on? And then we found out about that.
I think he was just trying to kiss up to his neighbor. He's trying to look tough in front of George.
Yeah, and I talked to one of the reporters who have become pretty much our friends out there.
Uh-huh.
I talked to one of them, and he said that he was already drunk off his butt, and it was only 10 o'clock in the morning.
Now, Cindy Sheehan, we understand Lance Armstrong is going to be coming out to Crawford to do some mountain bike riding with the president.
Right.
Do you think you'll have a chance to talk to him? Do you think he will say anything about you to the president?
Lance will say anything? I don't know, but I've been waiting for my invitation to join them. And I haven't heard anything yet.
Maybe they're just short.
Maybe they're
short one bike, Cindy.
Yeah.
What'd you hear? I'm sorry.
I haven't heard anything from Lance, but something else incredible happened yesterday.
What?
This man that lives right next to George Bush's gates across the street from his church that he goes to out there,
mm-hmm.
Was so upset that his neighbor would fire shots at us for this man, thinks that what we're doing, we have every right to do. This other man that lives over by George Bush, he has land on both sides of the road, and he has welcomed us to go camp there.
Oh, that's great.
That's fantastic.
I know, and it's closer to George Bush, and it's like wouldn't be in a ditch. We'd be out in a field like it's an acre.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to go, and Joan Baez is coming Sunday, and we're going to have a concert out there.
That's great, man. Huh. This is some old school peace activism. It's beautiful.
It really is beautiful.
And how many people are out there now?
I don't know how many are out there right now. I'm up at the Peace House because the sheriff has asked me to sleep in town because he said he would sleep better at night knowing that I wasn't sleeping out at the camp. He's a little worried for my safety.
How long have you been doing that?
Since the rally Saturday, after we had that rally Saturday, the big, wonderful, awesome rally, and he just said that he can't stay out there the whole time, so he would feel better if I came into town to sleep.
Hey, now, Cindy, are there any sort of, is there any sense that there's organized counter-protesting or just these belligerent yahoos?
This amazes me that here we are in the middle of supposed Bush country, which is just another lie, because we've had so many Texans coming through, and they just are fed up with him as we are.
They hated him. They've hated him longer than most of the rest of us.
I know. So they have to change that name. That's just a misnomer.
Uh-huh.
But there's just like six of them across the way.
Oh, okay. So that's it, huh?
And that's it. That's as much as they can muster together, and it's just
that
And you know what we do? We take them water and snacks and because they're standing out in the hot sun. They don't even have any shade.
Cindy, it's interesting. You know, we saw this story, some copy on the story about the guy with the pickup truck. But also included in that story was a little sidebar about your marital status. How in the world did your marital status end up being a part of the story? How do you react to that? How do you feel about that?
There was a story about my marital status and the guy who ran over the crosses.
Yeah, I mean they ran the story about the crosses, and then they said, "Oh, by the way, this and that and the other about your marital status."
Well, I'm not talking about that because my husband and I agree that that was between he and I, and not he and I and the nation. But I just still want to say that he supports me philosophically, and I just got an email from my daughter in Europe, and she said, "Mom, I support you 100%. You're all over here in Europe, and we are so proud of you, and you can tell the media that." And they just got to stay away from, they have to stay away from my family. I'm the one out here. I'm the one doing this, and I can take it. It hurts me really bad, but, you know, I put myself in this position, and I'm willing to take the smear campaign from the right, because I think this is so important.
We do,
but
too.
I need to leave my family alone.
Absolutely. We want to thank you for doing. I tell you, this is the first real peace activism that this country and this planet has seen from America since 9/11, and we're thanking you for it, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, Cindy. Stay well.
Great, guys. Thanks,
Cindy.
So
okay, take
bye
care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That was Cindy Sheehan from Crawford, Texas. Only six people on the counter protest. This means something, folks. This means that most of the country is behind this and believes the way that the way that Cindy Sheehan believes and at least sympathizes with her plight. Six people and a couple of yahoos. We'll be back in a second. It's 20 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Twenty-four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. It was great talking to her.
Yeah, it was.
She's got such a, like, she's got a very vulnerable and amazing sort of disposition and way about her, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And it seems like she's really holding it together pretty well, and it seems like she's getting a lot of support down there. In a few minutes, we're going to have documentary filmmaker Keith Beauchamp, who's filmed The Untold Story of Emmett Lewis Till, has its theatrical debut at the Film Forum in New York tomorrow. He joins us in studio along with Emmett Till's cousin, Simeon Wright, who is actually sharing a bed with Emmett Till the night that he was abducted. They're here to discuss the film and the impact it has had on the investigation into the murder of Emmett Till, who was exhumed recently.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something, yeah. And not everybody may agree with this, but I see a direct line between Mamie Till Mobley, who was Emmett Till's mother, who fought until she died in 2003 for justice for her son, to Merle Evers Williams, who was Megar Evers' wife, who watched him die on their front doorstep in 1963, shot to death. And those people weren't brought to justice until 40 years later, in the person of these folks that were eventually tried and convicted. And now you have Cindy Sheehan trying to get justice for her son. Now, they're not exactly analogous situations, but you do see individual people standing up, individual people working hard to get some form of justice, some form of closure in all of these situations.
Absolutely, absolutely true. And you know what's sad is that much to the dismay of everyone with a conscience who knows about this, Edgar Ray Killen, the 80-year-old ex-Klansman that was recently convicted in connection with the Cheney, Schwerner, Goodman killings in 1965, is out on bail. Out on bail after serving only 6 weeks. He's out on bail because they're going to try to appeal the case. And the judge, apparently, if it's not a murder conviction, can release the guy out on bail if he's not a flight risk. But what does this say? This guy's 80 years old. He could die at home in his favorite chair. This guy should be dying in jail no matter what.
Well, yeah. And see, this is the central question of justice delayed.
Yeah.
The idea that people can have had 40 years of freedom, whether it's in the Evers case, whether it's in Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner, whether it's in the 16th Street bombings, these people lived their lives and, in most instances, didn't do time. Didn't end up in prison. But the people they killed are all still dead.
That's right. And what does this say to people? I mean, what message does this put out? This type of lax and sensitive, sort of immoral legal decision. You know, it leads one to believe that, you know, progress or justice, you know, has not transpired. And what kind of message does it give to people to the black community, let alone to aspiring racist killers?
Yes.
That they can get, it's horrendous. And, you know, this is stuff that obviously is going to come to we're going to talk a little bit more about with Keith Beauchamp and about the Emmett Till, Emma Lewis Till story of the film. So stay with us for that. It's going to be a very engaging, interesting conversation. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Roused him out of the bed, and I don't think he really knew what was going on. So he was answering their question, but he wasn't saying yes, sir, and no, sir. So they became irate about that, and they started cursing and swearing. It was a terrifying experience. He had no idea what was going on, really.
In August of 1955, a 14-year-old African-American boy named Emmett Till supposedly whistled at a white woman outside a local grocery store in Mississippi. 3 days later, he was abducted in the middle of the night from the bed he was sharing with his cousin, who you heard on that tape there, and later found dead, beaten to a pulp with a bullet through his skull. An all-white jury acquitted two of his killers, who later bragged about the murder in a national magazine. The investigation into Emmett Till's death would have ended there, except for our next guest, Tenacity. His documentary film, The Untold Story of Emmett Lewis Till, uncovered evidence that prompted the Justice Department to reopen the case last year. The film opens this week at the Film Forum in New York and is set for a national release in October. We're pleased to welcome back to the show filmmaker Keith Beauchamp. He's joined by a man who was with Emmett Till on the fateful day in 1955 when he was accused of whistling at a white woman. Emmett Till's cousin, Simeon Wright, is here. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So from what I understand, Keith, this film is picked up tremendous amount of momentum. It's got a nationwide distribution. It's going to probably nominated for an Oscar. Did you have any idea that it would pick up this amount of attention and have the impact that it would have?
Well, I hoped that a day like this would come. It's been a difficult role, you know. I've been working on this now for 10 years, so to be at this point in time to say I have a finished project and at the same time was able to lobby the Justice Department to reopen the case, you know, this is still overwhelming to me. Everything that I've been going through for the past 10 years is really surreal.
What evidence was it that prompted the Justice Department to take on your requests?
Well, through my investigation, I uncovered there was up to 14 people involved with the kidnapping and murder of Emmett Till. Five of these people were black men. They were employees to J.W. Milam and Roy Bryant. We believe that they were forced to participate. And I ended up finding out that there's five people right now who could be indicted and charged for the kidnapping and murder of Emmett Till.
Wow. Now, there were in the film, there was a statement made that it was a black man who shot Emmett Till. Mm. What did your investigation mean?
Well, that's something that's still being reviewed at the moment. I know that the Justice Department have been reviewing this evidence for over a year now since they reopened the case on May 10th. And the investigators are going out, and they went back and actually interviewed all the people that I've interviewed along the way that had information. And, you know, some of that information came from eyewitnesses that, you know, that you saw in the film, of course. But still, those things have to be reviewed in order to establish what actually transpired. Now, it was said that some of these black men was forced to participate. Yeah. And, you know, considering the time, I can sort of understand. But, you know, these people have something to say. I mean, one of the men, Henry Lee Loggins, who was one of the people that they were trying to locate in 1955 throughout the trial, I actually had an opportunity to interview him, and now he's seeking immunity. So, you know, there's some questions that need to be answered, and I think these people hold a lot of information that could tell us what actually transpired in 1955.
Mm-hmm. Simeon Wright, you were there with Emmett Till at the time his abduction took place. And it strikes me that through the years and watching this film, the extraordinary dignity of your family as victims of this kind of heinous activity. Mamie Till Mobley, Emmett's mother, fighting till her death to try and get justice for her son. Mose Wright, and the rest of your family. How did you maintain your dignity and composure through now? It's been almost a half century, better than a half century, in fact.
Well, I guess one of the things that we did, we was victim. Most of America didn't see us as victim, especially me.
Why not?
Well, because of what happened to Emmett, and they focused more or less on that, and they didn't focus on how that my family, the home was violated by these men, how that they threatened us that if we talk, that my dad, that he wasn't going to live another year. And I guess we didn't forget what happened, but we had to lay some of this stuff down and just continue on with our lives. And, of course, Mamie kept it alive. She kept the story alive.
It's very interesting to me in listening to you talk in the film about how that when these men come into the house and start going through the rooms looking for Emmett, and that there was this moment where your folks were trying to negotiate with them to stop them from taking this boy out of the house, offering them money, and that there was literally a moment where one of these men was almost going to change his mind.
That was a moment that Roy Bryant hesitated when my mother offered him money to leave Emmett alone, and he seemed to want to. He seemed like he wasn't really going along with the program, but J.W. Mylan was the guy that forced everything. He had the gun, he had the flashlight, and he was giving the orders.
And now it wasn't his wife; it was Bryant's wife.
It was Bryant's wife, yes.
Now, there's been, and maybe both of you can speak to this, there's been a lot of back and forth about whether Emmett actually whistled at this woman. Now, there have been stories that he had a speech impediment that led people to believe that he might have been whistling when he wasn't. But you were there, Simeon, right? What happened?
I was there. Well, I went in the store with Emmett. Emmett went in first, and they sent me in behind him to make sure that he didn't speak out of line. He paid for his item. We walked outside of the store together. And as we got out of the store, Mrs. Bryant came out behind us, and she was headed north towards her car. Before she can get to her car, Emmett did whistle at her.
He did whistle.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Did he know at that point that he had done, that he had crossed some line, that he had transgressed in some way?
Not at that point. When he saw how scared we was, that's when he knew that he had done something wrong, because at that point he couldn't get in the car fast enough.
It's very interesting in listening to you describing the event, listening to Emmett's mom on the film, in that, you know, this was a charismatic kid, you know, a very smart kid, you know, an animated guy, you know, with a great sense of humor. And it just, it amazes me that to this day, you know, we get a report that Ray Killen is released out on bail. To this day in the South, that this type of stuff is still institutionalized, that these type of racial divisions and horrendous animosity, it's just still there. And I want to know that, you know, in your experience with the film and going out and talking to people, what effect is it having, you know, in the black community right now, and also just in terms of the civil rights movement where it stands today?
Well, we've been getting great support from the state of Mississippi in this regard, especially with the black residents there. You know, for some time, I was actually in Mississippi for 4.5 years shooting this film before anybody knew I was shooting it. So I befriended a lot of people in the Delta who actually had safe haven homes for me to come to if I ever was down there and needed to stay somewhere. But, you know, considering what's been happening in recent years, you know, of course, the atrocities of our past, there are many more. You know, there's so many facets of what's going on in those communities down in the Deep South now. Things haven't changed as much, especially in the Delta. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things is just like it was back in the 50s. You know, you still have blacks who are even afraid to talk about Emmett Till's name, you know, in public, you know. So you still have those people who are there with those same ideologies, and people are very careful at this point. But since the Emmett Till case reopened last year, you had the reopening of the 3 civil rights workers case, which helped.
Good
and
Cheney.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Then you had the reopening of 3 other civil rights murder cases in Florida, and I just read something about that today.
Yeah.
And you had the U.S. sending a public apology, national apologies on lynchings in America for not passing an anti-lynching bill in 104 years. So I envision, and Mrs. Mobley's vision was that if this case were to reopen first, it was going to help the others, and that's what's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we still have a long way to go in these small communities. You know, lynching still exists. There's still there's been a number of lynchings throughout the Deep South within the past 6.5-7 years.
Oh my God!
And you're talking about lynchings that have been ruled suicides from the local coroner's office in a lot of these small communities and in the jail system.
I had no idea.
So we have to be aware that these things are still continuing to happen today, and that was my whole point of producing a film like this, not only to bring recognition to the true catalyst of the American Civil Rights Movement, but to also bring recognition to all the other cases that have proven to be quite colossal to American history and that being made a part of history.
And that it's still happening.
Incredible. Simeon Wright, one of the things I think that galvanized people at the time Emmett was killed was his mother's decision, Mamie Till Mobley's decision, to hold an open casket funeral. What did the family all agree on that? Was that her individual decision? In the film, obviously, there was an attempt. She mentions that the funeral director said, you know, do you want me to make him up or something like that? And she said, no, I want people to see this. And, of course, Jet Magazine, which was published by John Johnson, who was just funeralized yesterday, published this picture of Emmett Till's open casket. And I think for a lot of people, it galvanizing and gave force and resonance to the civil rights movement. Was everyone in agreement about that at the time?
As far as I know, Mamie and her mother, they was in agreement to show the world what had happened to Emmett. And it was her decision all the way.
Mm. And the family backed her in it.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And that decision changed the face of race relations in this country forever.
Forever.
Yes. Keith Bouchamp, filmmaker of The Untold Story of Emmett Lewis Till, and Simeon Wright, Emmett Till's cousin. I want to thank you for being with us this
thank
morning.
Thank you so much, Sonata.
The film opens tonight at the Film Forum, tomorrow night, Wednesday, August 17th. And it's going to run for how long, do you know?
For 2 weeks, from August 17th to the 30th, to commemorate the 50th anniversary. So it's very important. August 28th is the 50th anniversary to Emmett Till's murder. So we need that support. We're still far from the courtroom, so that's why it's very important for the public to come out.
And it's also, just to educate yourself on this important story and the fact that this stuff still goes on. It was great talking to you guys.
Thank you.
Back momentarily with Lawton Smalls. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks. Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're going to put this thing down. Look, folks, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now is Planet Bush Bureau Chief, Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. It's Elvis Day in heaven, and all the angels are driving pink Cadillacs.
All right, buddy. All right. Look, the anniversary of 9/11 is coming up, and Rumsfeld announced some kind of walk or something. You know anything about that?
Yeah, Mark. It's called the America Supports You Freedom Walk, starting at the Pentagon, going 2 miles all the way up the National Mall. We're going to sit right in Lincoln's lap.
And what?
Sit right in there.
Yeah, all right. What is the point of this thing exactly?
The walk is to honor present and past American military personnel and highlight the value of freedom.
Oh, come on. You read that straight from the Defense Department's press release, didn't you, Lawton?
Yes, I did. I'm a respected war correspondent and a combat veteran, so I would say get your information from the horse's mouth.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Yeah, or the other end is what I'm thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, I saved the best part for last.
All right, so there's more. How can it possibly get any better than this, Lawton?
Hang on to something.
Uh-huh.
After the march, you know who's going to sing?
The judge?
No, but I like the way you think.
Oh, man.
Clint Black, huh?
What?
Clint Black.
Lawton, don't you think this is in horrible... Look, don't you think it's in horrible bad taste to commemorate the death of thousands of Americans with a public relations march for the military and a country music concert?
Didn't you hear me? Clint Black. Haven't you ever heard of Clint Black? I rack and I roll? No?
No, I haven't.
Well, Now, you can come along or you can stay behind or you can get out of the way, but our troops take out the garbage for the good old USA, Iraq and Iraq. You don't know that? The man's a genius.
No, I don't know that, and I don't care who he is, Juan. It's in bad taste. It's just wrong.
Well, the glass is always half empty for you liberals, isn't it?
Oh, come on.
Now, who would you have singing up there? Missy Elliott featuring Ciara and Fat Man Scoop? The Pussycat Dolls featuring Busta Rhymes?
What? Who the hell are you talking about?
I guess no one gets to have fun unless it's your kind of fun, isn't it?
Oh, come on.
Y'all are always talking about personal freedom, but only if it's your kind of personal freedom. Well, mister, there's going to be a Clint Black concert on the Mall on 9/11, and you can just deal with that, Led Zeppelin.
Hey, let me just ask you a question there, Juan. Couldn't they just do something dignified? Like, how about a moment of silence? How about something like that, buddy?
You'd rather have a moment of silence than this. Killing time is killing me. If I cross that line.
Stop it. Just stop singing. I can't, you know what I mean? I'm done with this. I'm done with it. Hey, the Pentagon, listen to me, buddy. Listen to me. Listen, you just stop singing, little man. The Pentagon's just trying to get people to support a war that most Americans don't want. They're losing the PR war, Lawton, so they're having parades and music. Like, that's going to help our troops somehow. This march is a desperate and pathetic and crass and will accomplish absolutely nothing except insult the people who died. Yeah, you ought to cry, little man. Yeah, what?
Daddy used to make me watch the Vietnam War on TV.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
3 hours every night. He'd sit there in his undershirt swinging from his bottle of Jack Daniels watching the war and laughing.
Oh, wow.
He thought it was funny. I'd say, Daddy, could we watch Laughing?
Oh, jeez, you're breaking my heart.
Daddy, can we watch Kiss Mars? He'd say, you watch the war, Locke.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's what the world's really like.
Oh, man. This is heavy.
Something happened in here.
Oh, man.
What it is. Ain't exactly.
All right, look, I didn't mean to get into all that, buddy. All right, just take it easy, man. Just take it easy. Okay. All right, buddy, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to open up that wound. I apologize, okay? Just take it easy and pull it together, will you? Oh, boy. Oh, my God. You all right?
If you liberals would just listen to some Clint Black, you'd get behind this war. I guarantee it.
Goodbye, Juan. I can't do it. I can't do it today, all right?
Just a little. God loves you. Deal with it. Killing time.
All right, good. That's it. That's it. Oh, my God. Wow. It's getting more and more disturbing in the dark places in Lawton's head, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a little flat, too.
So Mark Riley, you're going to be on New York One tonight?
Yeah, we're doing some debate analysis, the first Democratic debate. Uh-huh. And there will be four candidates. We've talked to all four of them here on Morning
Show. Uh-huh.
They're going to be on from 7 till 8:30 and then from 8:30 till 9. Myself and some of my closest personal reporting friends will analyze what we just saw and heard.
So that's the mayoral race, not the mayoral, right?
Yeah, that's
the mayoral race. I am going to be on Opie and Anthony's show in about 45 minutes.
Doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah, if you get XM and you want to pop over for a few minutes to Opie and Anthony.
Hey, wait a minute. Are you going to curse?
Yeah, channel 202 on XM. I get to be filthy.
I got to listen to this. I got XM. I got to listen to this.
I'm going
to
go be filthy. Hey, for those of you were just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Iraqi lawmakers have delayed the deadline for drafting the country's constitution. It turns out that they haven't addressed the question of women's rights, the role of Islam, and possible Kurdish autonomy. In other words, who will actually be in the country and exactly what kind of country it will be. On the upside, all parties have agreed that the final draft of the Constitution should use Times New Roman as a font. Yeah. President Bush will go for a bike ride with Lance Armstrong while he's on vacation. Armstrong is meeting with the president despite the fact that he is opposed to the war in Iraq. Besides, this isn't the first time he's dealt with a malignant testicle. Bush decided that falling on his face in front of Lance Armstrong would be less humiliating than doing the same thing in front of Cindy Sheehan. The Clinton Presidential Foundation will release a CD of Bill Clinton's favorite jazz music. It's the kind of music that makes you want to kick back, relax, with a cigar and a fat chick. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Repeat after me. Iran, it sounds a lot like Iraq. Wake up, sheeple. Iraq was just the warm-up. Get ready for the finale. Iran is going to be everyone's final act. Those are your morning sedition cliff notes. Tomorrow on the show, wow. You know, I'll tell you.
It's deep.
It's deep. I'm looking forward to it. Dick Cavett's coming in. Yep. Dick Cavett was one of the, you know, one of the intellectual talk show hosts. I mean, he was what Politically Incorrect was based on.
Yeah.
He was the idea. This was a guy you'd see in the 70s where you actually saw people like Norman Mailer on talk shows.
Yes.
You know, where you actually saw people like Fred Harris, the senator from Oklahoma, and Sly Stone on the same talk show. It had never been done before that, and of course, Politically Correct did it later with an agenda, but this was some intense television. He's going to be on. We got Michael McKean from Spinal Tap and Bob Balaban, of course, from Gosford Park and Waiting for Guffman. They're going to come on and be funny. We're going to hear another update from Cindy Sheehan, and we're going to give away some more Dave Chappelle DVDs of his uncut Showtime special that's given to us by Sony Entertainment. So, and we're going to be in Harlem this Friday at Amy Ruth's up on 116th Street with Mick Foley and Bret Easton Ellis and Mike B. Riley, you're going to be on New York One tonight.
Yeah, man. We got a lot of show coming up tomorrow. Yeah. A lot of show for the rest of the week. Be here. Good show today,
you
man.
You too, Riley.
Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.